Hey, this is WTOP's Jason Fraley, and we are being joined by, just say your name and your title real quick.
Hi, I'm Yoruba Richin. I am the director and producer of American Reckoning, along with my partner, my directing and producing partner, Brad Lichtenstein.
All right, and it's airing at 10 p.m. Eastern on PBS, and you can find it on YouTube as well as part of Frontline. So, hey, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
All right. So obviously, very heavy topic. Why don't you just tell our listeners what it's about? Explain what this unsolved case is.
Yes. So this is a film that tells the story of the murder of Warless Jackson, who was a foot soldier in the fight for civil rights and the Black freedom struggle here in Natchez, Mississippi. He was a secretary of the NAACP. He was a father of five. And we tell the story of what happened to him, but we also tell the story of the larger fight in Natchez for freedom and the resistance, the Black resistance that the community had against the white terrorism that was being inflicted in the community. So it tells a story of Warless Jackson, but also the Black community and what they did in order to fight off and protect themselves from white terrorism, which involves an organization that we also show in the film called Deacons for Defense, which was an armed resistance group that protected the Black community did not ascribe to the nonviolent strategy that if we don't hit back, if we're hit, that was not how, they were able to survive, in so many parts of the South. And so the Deacons is a little known part of our Black freedom struggle. They were all through Louisiana and Mississippi, and Warless worked with them. The organization that was the Deacons that were in Natchez.
Oh, wow. I didn't know he was a member of that as well.
We can't say for sure he was a member.
Okay.
That's been hard to verify, but he certainly worked with them. Gotcha. As the secretary treasurer of the NAACP.
Wow. Okay. I'll make sure to word it like that. They worked with him. Yes. So just tell our listeners, if they're not familiar, I mean, and obviously I don't want to spoil the whole thing. We want them to tune in, but just in general, exactly. What as far as we know happened to Warless? I mean, how was he found,
Yeah.
Where did they find his body? That kind of thing.
Yeah. So, you see in the film that Warless, after the events of 1965, there was a whole effort to integrate the city. And that was through, and the NAACP was leading that effort. NAACP was headed by a man named George Metcalf. George Metcalf was bombed in 1965 because of his, and it was an attempted assassination. He survived. In 1967, 2 years later, Warless and George Metcalf were friends, and Warless drove him. They both worked at Armstrong Tire Plant, which was a tire plant in Natchez, Mississippi. They both worked there, and Warless drove him to and from that plant. As he was recuperating, he had terrible injuries, but he was still able to work, still had to work. And so, in 1967, after the bombing of Metcalf, after the demands of the community had been met by the white white power structure, the business community, 1967, we're in 1967, and Warless gets a promotion at the tire plant, which had never been held by, it had only been held by white people, never been held by a Black person, and was seen as a white man's job. I should say the Armstrong Tire Plant was full of KKK members. And this was kind of the last straw for them. And they planted a bomb in Warless's truck. And that is how he was killed. And the person, his son, Warless Jackson Jr., was only 8 years old when this happened. And he tells us how he, you know, heard the explosion and went down to the plant and found out that it was his father. And we also see in the film the trauma, obviously, that this family face still faces, and how it resonates, you know, till today.
Wow. So you mentioned that you interview his son in the film. Who else are sort of some of the voices and faces that you were able to speak to as part of this?
So we interviewed his son and two of his children, Deborah Jackson and Denise Ford. And then we also spoke to the children of a few Klansmen who were part of the organization that Wow. was terrorizing the community. And it's very important that we included those voices. This is not just, you know, this violence is perpetrated by somebody. And we can't just talk to the victims. We need to find out if the perpetrators aren't alive, then their family members, their children, just how the trauma and the stories are showed, you know, are through generational. So they are on the other side as well. And Brad and I felt that was very important, crucial to telling the full story. So we interviewed a few of their children, also to we also interviewed the pioneering journalist Stanley Nelson, who is a journalist at the Concordia Sentinel, which is in Faraday, Louisiana, on the other side of Natchez. And after the Emmett Till Act was passed by Congressman, or championed by Congressman Lewis and passed, he started digging into some of these cases and looking at what happened and why there was no accountability, even though in Warless's case, there was a very thorough FBI investigation. So he's a central voice through the film. And then also Dr. Akinyele Umojo, a professor who has written about the Deacons for Defense and armed resistance in the Black community. So those are some of the voices that are in the film.
And just to follow up on something really quick, forgive me if this is a dumb question, but the Klansmen's children that you interviewed, have they denounced the Klan? Like they've seen the light and moved on and now they're interviewing you, or are they all still wrapped up in that whole?
I don't think it's as simple as that. Okay. We have, you know, one woman, Deborah, whose father was in the Klan, and she was also terrorized by him herself. So she is very, you know, it's very hard for her to talk about this. It's very emotional. But she has spoken out against, she has done public presentations and spoke out against, you know, the racism of her father and her family. And she's actually been ostracized by a lot of her family. With our other child of a Klan member, you know, I think he also, you know, loved his dad too, even though, you know, knowing what he did and what he was a part of. So I don't think it's so simple as a denouncement of the Klan. But we're grateful that they you know, participated in the film.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, it's you know, hats off to you all, you know, getting a 360 degree view of this whole thing by the children of everyone involved. You mentioned something else that I wanted to ask a little more about. You mentioned that, you know, the Emmett Till Unsolved Civil Rights Crime Act was signed into law in 2008, and that sort of, you know, opened up a lot of these other cases. What is that? I think 150 other victims that they're still waiting for justice. Explain a little bit more of that overall context of, you know, how that was passed and how this falls under that sort of umbrella.
Sure. Well, as I said, it was championed by Congressman Lewis, the late Congressman Lewis, and he really felt that that these crimes had to be acknowledged and investigated where possible. And of course, you know, Emmett Till's, you know, the experience of what happened to Emmett Till And many other, you know, the four little girls who were bombed, where they were able to bring somebody to justice. You know, these crimes were not that far in the past, and they needed to be re-looked at and investigated. Now, what we learned making the film is that Congressman Lewis didn't want to stop at just that. He actually wanted a truth and reconciliation commission, similar to what happened in South Africa, where it's not just about putting someone in prison for these crimes. And a lot of times, they, you know, at this point, at that point, and especially at this point, the people are dead. The perpetrators are dead. So you're not going to get someone locked up for this or held accountable. But if we could bring the stories of what happened to their families, that would give some sense of closure, some sense of accountability, of people coming forward and saying what happened. And in the truth and reconciliation, you know, type situation. But of course, that was not politically viable at the time. So I think part of what this film does is ask, what does just justice look like for these families who won't get someone in jail? But how else can we think of justice? And I think that brings up an issue of talking, you know, brings up the talking about reparations. And reparations is about repair, right? Repair to the harm of these families. So we want to leave you with that as well in terms of the film.
Now, also what you leave us with is there, and again, you know, don't give away the ending of it because we want to watch it, but, you know, can we say, is there some sort of, do you have some like inklings or suggestions of what you believe might have happened? You know, do you try to provide a little closure in terms of what you believe the clues and facts lead to, or how do we leave it?
Absolutely. Yes. And you should watch the film to find that out. But yes, the clues are pieced together, and especially with the help of Stanley Nelson, the journalist, who's looked into this story. And it's, you know, given to the family in terms of, you know, what the most likely scenario is. And you can see that what the most likely scenario was of what happened to their dad.
And is this a different Stanley Nelson than the, you know, the famous filmmaker? This is the journalist.
It is. Okay. He's a journalist, a print journalist based in Faraday, Louisiana.
All right. Just had to check because we interviewed that Stanley, the guy that just made Attica, the documentary. So I just wanted to make sure it wasn't the same. You know, journalism, documentary, filmmaking aren't that far apart. So I had to check.
Exactly.
Well, cool. I know you sort of touched on it a little bit, but let's end sort of this way. I know you directed recently the what was it called? The Killing of Breonna Taylor. And in a case like that, that's very recent. And like you said, you are demanding justice of, you know, people that are alive and existing right now in the real world today. Mm-hmm. Sort of compare and contrast doing a film like that versus American Reckoning, which is these people that have long been gone. And now you're talking to family members. Like, talk about how, I mean, they're different experiences, but at the same time, it's sort of, there is no past, there is no present, there is no future. It's you're trying to, you know, right wrongs and injustices across time, no matter when these things happen, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's very, you know, in some ways, it's done. In some ways, it's very hard and upsetting to see how these this pursuit for justice continues, you know, continues over a long time, and we still are searching for that justice and accountability, like in Breonna Taylor's case, which has not happened, and we have so many other cases where it's not happened. And this is a continuation of the justice that we didn't get in the past as well. So it's very hard emotionally to tell these stories, but so important. And so important to, you know, especially in this time when there is an assault on across the country on telling what our true history is and suppressing parts of it that make people feel uncomfortable. So, you know, I think these stories are, as a documentary filmmaker, it's imperative that we bring out this history and also tell the present day stories. So you know, I'm really grateful that Frontline has been, you know, so supportive of this film, really looked, was very excited for us to tell the history, and also, and how that history you know, affects the present day, and to really let us dive deep for a greater understanding.
Wow. Well, we can't wait to watch it. Again, it's called American Reckoning as part of Frontline. And it's going to be airing on PBS tonight, Tuesday night, February 15th at 10 o'clock Eastern on PBS. And also you can catch it on YouTube too. So, hey, thanks so much for joining us. And moreover, thank you for tackling such an important topic. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. We'll talk to you later.
Okay.